But that wish certainly didn't come true, 'cause scary mad wishes don't make things come true.
Sorry we're late. I've drank too much. This is going to be atrocious. But you're all going to laugh at the parts where you're not supposed to laugh. And you'll cry when you get home and you realize you should have cried earlier, because I will be crying because I will have been emotionally touched, not physically touched, and it'll be sad and wonderful at the same time. Before I begin, I do this podcast. It's called You, Me, Them, Everybody, and there are stickers on the tables. Please take them home. Please don't put them on your T-shirt or on your backpack, because those fall off, and they're going to be on the sidewalk, and that's just a waste of like 8 cents for me. I know you want a drink, and you have to be quiet when everybody else is reading, so let's order drinks now. Give Dan a lot of money. We're usually closed on Monday nights, so we all need money. Dan was also a dog walker, so he can relate to that last reading. The other two readers, wonderful fucking people. I love them a lot. I'm not going to swear once I actually start reading, so I'm trying to get it out now. Kate, thank you so much for doing this. Kate and Aaron do this wonderful thing called Triatribe. Billy's here. Billy's tabling. Billy sells zines. He's part of Loop Distro. Billy's an amazing man. These people are wonderful fucking people. Once again, I'm trying to swear now, not really emphasizing why I'm saying fucking. It doesn't really make any sense. I've had too many beers. Keep that in mind. Okay, so I'm dressed like this for a reason.
You look great.
Thank you. I think I do look great, actually. I feel comfortable. I've worn this the entire day. I work outside. I hang up posters. I, like Catherine, but unlike Catherine, I don't know her current job, I have a shitty job. I'm underdeveloping. I'm underliving my potential. Underdeveloping doesn't even make sense in context, and I apologize. I've had too much to drink. I'm going to meet about Mr. Rogers, all right? All of my friends, most of you who know me, most of you who that are here know me. I thank you for showing up on a Monday night. Once again, sorry about the lateness. Okay, I have three heroes in life, Mr. Rogers, Bozo, and Johnny Cash. And the only tattoo I've ever considered having is a photo, or a likeness, say, of Johnny Cash on stage performing a song. It doesn't really matter which. There's three chords, so they all fucking sound the same anyways. And then Bozo and Mr. Rogers sharing a table and drinks and cigarettes, just enjoying a wonderful evening. Anyways, I don't want to read about Bozo or Johnny Cash, though they're great people and I love them dearly. I want to read about Mr. Rogers. He makes me feel good, and I don't want this to sound sexual or weird, and I'm sure it does, and I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that. Okay, so I'm going to start. I'm not going to talk nearly as fast as I'm talking now. I will probably cry. I'm warning you now. It's going to be really awkward. Therefore, I want to plug shit before I begin. Rather than pass a basket around, even though that's what we usually do, I'm going to ask any of you that are interested in whatever to peruse Billy's area. You don't have to buy anything per se, but come on, there's like 50-cent shit. You can afford that. I mean, come on. Secondly, if you don't necessarily have the money or you know you're not going to read a zine, buy them a drink. They're two readers, wonderful people. Buy them a drink. And when you buy that drink, tip well. I think it's just good. I don't believe in karma or any of that shit, but you know, whatever, fuck it. Okay, so I'm going to start the piece now. I feel like I've apologized enough, and I will apologize more. So this piece is called Mr. Rogers, You, Me, Them, Everybody, or My Search for God. Silence. There it is. Okay. Alright. I've been a fan of Mr. Rogers since I could speak, and as time goes on, I get a little more obsessive. A poster from his WTTW 25th anniversary show hangs in my apartment. I've read six of his books, one of which was a parenting book. It was about 12 pages long, telling kids that it's okay to shit. I already messed up, I swore. I apologize. Okay. I've seen the documentary Fred Rogers, America's Favorite Neighbor, about 10 times. It's narrated by Michael Keaton, who was on the show. It's wonderful. I highly recommend it. Over 100 of his songs have been in my iPod for a few years. The man is someone I admire and tend to appreciate when times are bad, and I'd like to change that. I'd like to not have to remind myself that someone so good and pure could exist, and I think that's possible if more people are reminded of Mr. Rogers, even if it's a joke. Part 1. You. Like most people born in the second half of the 20th century, television played the role of a loving parent. I had a television in my bedroom since the age of 8. I'd seen every episode of Charles in Charge, a show I never really liked, by the age of 10. From 6th to 8th grade, I knew the storyline for the soap opera General Hospital, and I can still tell you about Brenda wearing a wire on her mob boss boyfriend, Sonny Corinthos. Since high school, I haven't been able to fall asleep without the aid of television. During the week, I usually watch ABC's World News Now. You may know it as the news in the middle of the night that has a polka song. On Saturday nights, I pass out to visions of the end of the world, thanks to televangelists that like to rant about the rapture. I tend to sleep well, knowing that soon I will be roasting. Every so often, when I can't fall asleep until 6:30 in the morning, I'll catch an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood aired original episodes from 1968 until 2001. The show continued in reruns until last September. If you had a television, you inevitably watched Fred Rogers. You may only remember his sweaters or comfortable shoes or simple songs, but you know of the man, and hopefully your memories of him are positive. If they're not, well, hopefully we can change those. Part 2, Me. The Search for God. Part 1, The Father. I was raised to believe in God. I wasn't raised to believe any one religion. My mom liked the values and ideas behind Catholicism, but didn't think it was safe to be in the same locker room or bathroom with a priest. My grandparents liked the idea of a Christian God, but tended to just watch soap operas, talk shows, and baseball games. The family wasn't involved in any church, but I was encouraged to watch shows like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood on a daily basis. My belief system was formed around a man that spoke calmly in a television and three people that stared into screens until they could fall asleep. I believed in Santa longer than I believed in God, but I still believe in Mr. Rogers. I've also believed in the idea that sports can fill the role of God. Baseball. It started with baseball. During grade school, I'd come home from school and watch Cubs games with my grandfather. I knew nothing about any other team. I was convinced the 1989 Chicago Cubs were the greatest team in the history of sport. I actually bought an Andre Dawson jersey last year, and though I'm very ashamed to admit this, whenever I put it on before a game, I do this. I do his warm-up stance, and I put the hat on, and it's sad. It's really sad. I was lucky enough to have my grandfather take me to a ball game during the 89 season at Wrigley Field. We watched the Cubs play the Pirates, and we got to watch Harry Carey lean out of the booth. It was a religious experience. We sat up a lot, we sang, we took off our hats, and we prayed. Though I'm no longer and can never be that attached to a team again, I do believe that one can have a wonderful experience at the ballpark. It could be 3 hours where nothing could go wrong as long as you reject incoming calls and text messages. But does it fill the void of God? No. It may come close to heaven for a few hours, but it's difficult to take that experience outside of the ballpark. Football. The Chicago Bears are watched every Sunday, some might say religiously. Since I was 3 years old when the Bears won their last Super Bowl, and remember nothing really about them, I've been reading about that team. I've learned that Jim McMahon was a reckless and fun beer drinker, Ditka was an angry drunk with a DUI under his belt, and Walter Payton was the greatest running back that ever accidentally shot a friend in the leg. The team was colorful and had a shuffle that is still sung today. The characters on the team were just as exciting as the 12 Apostles, and just like the 12 Apostles, I find them more interesting as fiction. The idea of William Refrigerator Perry is much better than the reality of a 350-pound washed-up player with debilitating paralysis. Boxing. My grandfather loved the movie Rocky. Every time it or any of the first five Rockies were on WGN, he'd tell me to sit down and watch with him. I did. I learned the power of an underdog could change the world, specifically when it comes to crushing communism and street fighting. A strong will and dedicated training regimen can win you the heavyweight championship belt. This led to following Mike Tyson, the youngest champion in the history of the sport, and probably the craziest champion in the history of all sports. The boxer went from juvie to a farm in upstate New York to learn how to box. An old trainer taught him discipline and how to love. Then the old man died. Enter Don King. Fast forward a few years to 2 rape convictions. Fast forward a few years to biting off ears. Fast forward a few years to a face tattoo. The man has proved to me that there is no God. I wasn't able to embrace my grandfather's belief in escapism through God and sport. He could sit in his lazy boy chair with a beer and a game and a pack of cigarettes and be content, thanking the Lord for every win. But I wasn't. I grew to enjoy Lazy Boy chairs, beer, and cigarettes, but I can't say they fill the hole of a higher power. Part 2, The Sun. I did not like Mr. Rogers as a preteen. I found his upbeat attitude and calm demeanor total and utter bullshit. By this time, I quit all sports and decided Nirvana, you know that band, was the only band, only anything that mattered. I liked that they were angry and could be loud and could be quiet and they were self-destructive. I liked that they seemed to hate what they were doing. I liked that they rejected the ideas of metal. I liked that they didn't care about their public persona. I liked all of this, not realizing that I was 100% in the wrong. It didn't matter. I was ironing on the band's patches to my backpack and spray painting their logo on my skateboard. And I was never a good skateboarder. I think I just fucking spray painted that thing to just walk around with it and hold it. And if it held it at the right angle, you could clearly see that I took hours spray painting the Nirvana logo. High school brought bands like Sonic Youth and Fugazi to my attention. I began to play in bands. I thought playing guitar in odd tunings was real art. I really hated people that believed in God. I really hated people that had money. I really hated. College led me to Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash and Dolly Parton. I began to drink at cheap bars with old jukeboxes. I heard the same song 5-10 times a night. Their plain songs from the heart was real art. I read their autobiographies. I tried to find God. I tried to find God, but only did a half-assed job. For the last few years, I thought that the Flaming Lips may be the answer for musical God. A band that has furries and aliens on stage seems like something that could be in the Bible or Quran or a very important pamphlet on Scientology. They sing about dying, which I know is the basis of the majority of Christian tunes out there. I like to think that I could find transcendence in music, or at least hear something that will help detach my brain from my body. I buy into certain artists and look up to them. I look up to them for a few months, and then I think about the end result. One guy in Nirvana writes a blog for a failing Seattle newspaper, and one guy fronts a band that no one really likes anymore, and the other guy got out early. Sonic Youth is permanently playing to people that are cool, and it's really tiring to be cool. Ian McKay still seems angry. Johnny Cash created simple songs about pain and heartbreak while destroying himself in the ones he loved with painkillers, and he also burnt down a forest. June Carter Cash was the ultimate example of standing by your man, and her life seemed like one big sad sacrifice. Dolly Parton's homespun tales of a simple beginning, learning how to appreciate what you have and have a golly gee attitude towards life seemed like a great option for a long time. But I can't afford to put that much money into my face and or chest. The Flaming Lips seem happy, but they don't do anything crazy. They still live in Oklahoma City. They lead quiet lives, and I figure I could be happy and still live in Chicago and lead a quiet life. I don't need the transcendence of music, but that also means I won't find God in it either. So I tried to find God in Oprah. I watched her show a few times. I read a book called The Gospel of Oprah, and I like Oprah enough. She does some good things, but she's still not God. I tried to find God in writers like Hemingway and Algren, and I find myself embracing abusing my liver. And I still find myself embracing abusing my liver, but God's still not there. The most recent search for God is in science. I read science articles that I don't understand, and I listen to science podcasts that I think I understand. I reject most, if not all, things not based in science. God's not there, but I think I am learning something. Part 3, the Holy Spirit. I try not to get in conversation with people about their belief systems. For those of you that know me, I'm probably totally wrong, and I wrote this while I was sober, which I now learn is a mistake. I'm successful with this most of the time, at least when I'm sober. One person that I can't avoid discussing my religion or my lack thereof with is my mother. My mother believes in God. She gives God credit when something goes well and is confused when things don't. And this is relatively new. She's convinced of God's presence because she's fallen in love with a priest. And when I say falling in love with a priest, I don't mean like, I love you. I mean like, I want to do that to the priest because, you know, that's cool. I have not fallen in love with a priest or any member of any church. And maybe if I do, I'll understand the good. There is one religious figure that my mother and I can connect with, and that's Mr. Rogers. Maybe I overthink everything. Mr. Rogers didn't overthink things because overthinking gets you nowhere. Every problem can be compartmentalized, and if you take individual problems and solve them, well, there isn't anything to overthink, is there? Then, I believe that Mr. Rogers can help solve all of the world's problems. And I'll give you two very basic examples to illustrate my point. Number one, war. Mr. Rogers does not believe in war. In 1983, he made a week of shows called Conflict. He did it to reassure children that the arms race would not end the world. He ended the Friday episode with the lullaby Peace and Quiet, wishing all of us peace. Following the lullaby was Isaiah chapter 2, verse 4 on a blank screen. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning forks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. 2, extremism. When we're extreme in any way, we're not accepting of everyone. And if we're not accepting of everyone, we're doing something wrong. During a memorial service for Fred Rogers in 2003, Reverend Fred Phelps, the guy that protested outside of Matthew Shepard's funeral, you know, the guy with the God hates bag signs, you know that guy, he showed up because Mr. Rogers was too accepting on his shows. He was there because for over 30 years, Mr. Rogers never spoke out against homosexuality. To Mr. Rogers, extremism wasn't helping people accept. Extremism thrives on fear. And Mr. Rogers helped us understand that it's okay to be afraid, and in due time, we can get over our fears. For example, we shouldn't be afraid of being sucked down the bathtub drain because we're too big to fit in that bathtub drain. Everybody. Why not start a religion based on Fred Rogers? We can base it on 8 basic tenets. Tenet 1, kindness. The man was nice to everyone. There's countless stories of him listening to everyone that crossed his path. He always had a smile. He was kind to children and kind to adults because deep down, he knew we're all still children. I can go on for days about the man's kindness. And if you have any doubt of it, there's 895 examples of his kindness currently available. Tenet 2, stick-to-itiveness. In the episode Superheroes, Mr. Rogers sings about conquering fears and having to fail and try again in order to learn something new. The song had the chorus, "You've got to do it. Do it every little bit. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it." Mr. Rogers started his show because he wanted to work in television. He knew that he could affect great change to a powerful medium, and he did. With little training and no name, he stuck to his guns and never catered to anyone but himself. Tenet 3, keep an open mind. Fred Rogers learned to break dance at the age of 60. He made friends with people that needed special chairs. He took us on tours of crayon factories. He didn't fear the VCR, and because of him, we have things like DVR. Most importantly, he taught us to accept everyone for just the way they are. Number 4, responsibility. We need to feed the fish. We need to pick up after ourselves. Once we're done playing, we need to make sure things are nice and tidy. If things are nice and tidy, everyone will be in a better mood. He knew it was responsibility to children, so he did not endorse any product for the duration of his career. He would only lend his likeness to nonprofits so as not to confuse children. When Burger King ran ads with a Mr. Rogers lookalike in the mid-80s, Mr. Rogers issued a release telling children it wasn't him. Burger King pulled the ads and publicly apologized. Number 5, stick up for yourself. On May 1st, 1969, Fred Rogers appeared before the United States Senate Subcommittee on Communications. His goal was to support funding for PBS and the Corporations for Public Broadcasting in response to significant proposed cuts by President Nixon. He gave members on the committee a philosophical statement. He told the members that he didn't need to read it out loud because he trusted that they would read it when they got home. He recited the lyrics of the song, "What Would You Do With the Mad That You Feel?" He spoke for roughly 6 minutes. At the end of his presentation, Senator John Pastore said, "I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. Looks like you've just earned the $20 million. And he did. Instead of losing the majority of public broadcasting funding, Congress awarded more money. The budget went from $9 million to $22 million the next year. Number 6, do it yourself. The first television show he worked on had a budget of $30 a show. He moved to public television because he didn't agree with the advertisements on that show. He felt that they undermined the message of the program. Once he started his own show, he wrote all the scripts for all 895 episodes. He voiced the majority of the characters in the land of make-believe. He wrote all of the songs on the show. He was able to deliver quality programming because he made sure he did it himself. Tenet 7, self-control. Fred Rogers maintained a weight of 143 pounds for the last 30 years of his life. He woke up at 5:30 a.m. every day. He prayed for his family and friends every day. He swam most every day, in the nude, I might add. He didn't smoke or drink. He was a vegetarian. He was married to one woman and stayed married to that woman until he died. He knew how to achieve the most out of himself by some basic routines. The greatest lesson he may have to teach us adults is how to age gracefully. Tenet 8, modesty. The cardigan sweater that Mr. Rogers changed into at the beginning of every episode of his show was made by his mother. All of them were made by his mother. He drove a moderately priced sedan. His navy blue suit coat came from Old Navy. He didn't spend money on trivial things. He didn't make people trivial things. There are no stories of Mr. Rogers and prostitutes and drugs and abuse. I find myself listening to his songs and watching his show when I'm down. I instantly feel hopeful, much more hopeful than any politician or song or movie can make me. I'm hopeful like I was when I was at my first Cubs game, and it may be a Pavlovian response. I don't know and I don't want to know. I just want to be able to maintain that hope. Keep Mr. Rogers' basic teachings in my head at all times. Mr. Rogers left the show with a 1 minute and 26 second speech. It was simple and it was poignant, and here's part of it. I'm just so proud of all of you who have grown up with us. And I know how tough it is someday to look with hope and confidence on the months and years ahead. But I would like to tell you what I have often told you when you were much younger. I like you just the way you are. Thank you to everybody for coming out. Buy lots of drinks. Give people money. Thank you to Kate, Aaron, Billy, everyone that read. You're all wonderful. Buy a lot.
One time I wished that a lion would come and eat up my house and my street. I was mad at the world and I wished that the beast would stomp everything with his big heavy feet and eat everything with his big sharp teeth and eat everything with his teeth. But that wish certainly didn't come true, 'cause scary mad wishes don't make things come true. One time I wished that a dragon would come and burn up my daddy's big store. I was angry with him 'cause I wanted to play, and he went out the door to his store right away. I wished that the dragon would burn his store. I wished it would burn Daddy's store. But that wish certainly didn't come true, 'cause scary mad wishes don't make things come true. Everyone wishes for scary mad things. I'm sure that you sometimes do too. I've wished for so many, and I can say that all kinds of wishes are things just like clay. They're things that your thinking has made. So wish them and don't be afraid. I'm glad it's certainly that way, aren't you? That scary mad wishes don't make things come true. No kinds of wishes can